Welcome back to another episode of the Fun Size Podcast. Today I'm joined with a good friend of mine who is also a shorty. She is a trauma-informed physiotherapist and yoga instructor who empowers people to feel safe in their bodies with movement. And I'm gonna let her tell you about herself, and we're gonna get all up in Adriana's business here. So, welcome to the show, Adriana.
Thank you so much. Such a nice little intro. Yeah, I'm Adriana. I'm, like you said, a trauma-informed physiotherapist and yoga instructor, and I primarily work with people who have chronic pain. So that's a huge area of my practice as a physio and yoga instructor. But of course, I love working with all individuals. And yeah, my main points of my practice are that I really just like to try and empower people with movement, let people know that movement comes in so many different forms that we don't have to have really rigid rules around movement, that there's so many different ways that we can move our body. And of course, keeping that trauma-informed lens in mind, that means that we are really giving people a lot of choice around their movement choices. That's kind of, yeah, the biggest thing about my practice in a nutshell. As you said, I'm also a shorty. I'm 5 feet or 152 centimeters for all my Canadians who use that system.
Yeah, so before we get into like what movement is and like what trauma-informed care is, do you want to tell us a little bit about like your backstory, like why you became a physiotherapist?
Yeah, sure. So one of the big reasons I became a physio is I grew up with a mother who has multiple sclerosis. So if you don't know much about that disease, it impacts your nervous system and makes it harder for you to move. It really impacts everybody completely differently. So it can vary from person to person. But how it showed up for my mom is as I gradually went through my teenage years, she just had a lot more issues with mobility. So she had to start using a cane and then a walker, which that's what she currently uses. So basically, just seeing that around the house a lot, it just made me really grateful for how much I could move my body. I was always a really active kid, and I was just, yeah, always so grateful that I could do that. And just really seeing how that impacted her, both physically and mentally, just made me realize how important movement is. And it made me want to help other people with movement. So that was, the backstory of why I became a physio. And then when I originally became a physio, I thought I actually wanted to work with children. And I randomly stumbled upon working with military veterans and RCMP. And so, in that practice, it was a lot of dealing with people who had been through various amounts of traumatic experiences and chronic pain. And yeah, it just kind of clicked. I really fell in love with that population. I found it extremely rewarding. And I really liked that you could bring in mental and physical health to physiotherapy. And yeah, that's what made me kind of pursue that avenue and then brought in the yoga and the trauma-informed care and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's so interesting. How like so with the yoga, is that just kind of like a passion you just wanted to kind of add to it or?
Yeah, pretty much. I basically saw or read a lot of research and, did a lot of yoga myself and noticed how much it impacts pain, how much of a benefit it can have on pain, and also how much of a benefit it can have on mental health. And so I just thought it would be a really good modality to use for the population I was working with. And as I've gone on, I've worked with other populations. I no longer work in that setting, but I still work in chronic pain, and I do work sometimes with people who have eating disorders or disordered eating. And so I found yoga to be really beneficial for them as well.
Do you have a favorite population or demographic or anything like that that you like to work with?
I love working with, I mean, anyone who has chronic pain, really. I do. I don't know if there's like a set demographic, people who are open to discussing mental and physical health and all those kind of aspects and using movement. That's kind of what I like working with. It doesn't matter to me the age or the gender or anything like that.
Right, that open-mindedness is super important.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's talk about let's like define something. So like what is chronic pain? What is movement? I'm sure we can like have a whole long discussion about both of those things.
Yeah. So my definition of chronic pain is, I could pull up an actual definition from the International Society of Chronic Pain, but from what I can think of off the top of my head, it's basically any pain that lasts longer than a 3 to 6 month period. And the reason they use that period is because often if you have what we call acute pain, that's when there's some damage to some tissues in the body, muscles, ligaments, joints, that kind of stuff. And those things can typically heal within a 3 to 6 month period. And so chronic pain is that pain after that period of time where we realize it's no longer just about what's happening in the tissues of the body, because often those have healed, but yet we're still experiencing pain. And so with chronic pain, they say it's really anytime your body is sensing a threat, that is what can create chronic pain, whether or not there's actual physical damage occurring or an actual threat that does occur.
Interesting. And now, how about movement?
Movement. I have never defined movement before.
Well, I guess I mean, like, so I think a lot of people confuse movement and exercise.
Yeah, I mean, movement to me is just basically any time you are doing something with your body. So that could be literally anything at all. It could be going for a walk. It could be doing stretches on your couch. It could be doing yoga in your bed. It could be golfing, swimming, dancing, anything at all where you're just physically doing something with your body. That's what I define as movement.
I guess what I'm asking is, like, or wanting you to say is that movement goes beyond just lifting weights or running or whatever else we do in the defined exercise category.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
So what about like trauma-informed care? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah, so basically, trauma-informed care is essentially recognizing or believing that every single person has experienced some level of trauma in their life, whether or not they disclose that to you. So you're really just anytime you're working with someone, you're looking at them through a lens of this person could have potentially experienced trauma. And so when I am talking to them, when I'm making a movement plan with them, when I'm doing yoga with them, whatever it is that I'm doing, I'm using that lens. And so there's some pillars to trauma-informed care, which basically what you're doing is you're trying to, one, never re-traumatize someone. Of course, there's circumstances that we can't control, but the things that are in your control, you're trying as much as you can to not re-traumatize people. And the other pillars are that you're providing a lot of choice for people. You are trying to provide as much safety as you can for people and build a level of trust.
I love that. So how do you,
Yeah.
can you give an example of like how you give trauma-informed care?
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, if I'm doing it from a physio perspective, I'm often working one-on-one with people. And because I'm working with chronic pain, I'm doing a lot of choosing movements or different exercises that people are going to do. And so in that, even though I'm, quote unquote, the professional, I have the degree and I'm the one that knows the things, I don't just say, hey, this is what I'm seeing. You're going to do these five exercises. This is your homework type thing. It's a lot of collaboration with the person. This is what I'm seeing. What does that mean to you? Do you understand that? Here are some exercise ideas that I have. Do these work for you? Are there other choices you would prefer? Do you prefer to do things lying, sitting, standing? You're kind of just giving a lot of different options for people. And there is some specific things to think about when you're working one-on-one with people in terms of the environment that you're working in, which I won't go into too much detail about that just because it could be a whole other podcast. But yeah, just little things that you kind of do with your environment to make people feel comfortable.
Yeah, that I love that. It's like giving the patient like, hey, like here's like all the things we can do. Which one do you prefer to do? Which one do you like to do? Because that's so important. Like if you don't enjoy what you're doing, you're never going to stick with it long term. You're never going to eventually heal that. Or can you heal chronic pain? Like, is that it? Okay. I'm just trying to figure out the right terminology, right? So I mean, that's my perfectionism coming out, right? It's like I have to say it
Yeah,
right.
I'm sure you see that a lot too, right? Like if you're giving exercises to people or giving someone a plan, I'm sure people stick to things more often if it's something that they actually enjoy doing and they feel safe doing it. It's the same thing for chronic pain, for anything, really.
Yeah. So speaking of perfectionism, let's talk a little bit about how perfectionism contributes to chronic pain.
Yes. So perfectionism is such a hot topic because so many people, at least a lot of women I know my age, definitely consider themselves perfectionists. I would 100% say I'm a recovering perfectionist. I think that I never considered myself a perfectionist. And then I actually dove a little more into perfectionism and was like, oh no, absolutely. That's a.
Can I tell you a funny story? You know the Enneagram test? Have you ever taken it?
Yes, I have. I think I'm a four wing five or a five wing four, one of the two.
Okay. So I took it the first time I took it, I got my results and I got a one, which is perfectionism. And I literally was like, no, that's not me. And I went to go take it a second time. And like halfway through taking the test, I'm like, oh my gosh, the mere fact that I needed to prove myself wrong and tell myself that I'm not a perfectionist is clear. It's just so clear that I am a perfectionist. And I stopped halfway through taking that second test and being like, okay, I accept. I accept.
It's hard to accept. But yeah, basically how perfectionism can contribute to chronic pain is perfectionism is essentially the belief that you have to be perfect, right? That everything you do needs to be done with a level of precision. And if it's not, you're very judgmental of yourself or perhaps judgmental of others if you feel like they're not perfect or they're not doing things well. And it's really hard because in society, perfectionism is seen as a good trait, right? Like we are really good at our jobs or a straight A student or an amazing athlete, and people praise you for those things. But in reality, underneath, if you're achieving those things and you're having a high level of anxiety or beating yourself up over it, or it's just causing a ton of distress, it's not, a good thing that you would want in your life because it's impacting your mental health. And that can also impact your physical health because essentially, chronic pain, the way it works is it is a lot to do with our nervous system. And basically, when you're living with chronic pain, oftentimes your nervous system is in a state of fight or flight. So, to kind of define that for people, if they're not aware of what that means, it's that your body is preparing to fight anybody that's coming to you or to flee from danger. And so, if you're in that state, your muscles are probably a lot more tense. You might have different, hormones or things going through your body that's impacting your level of pain, some inflammation that could be impacting your level of pain. And so how that relates to perfectionism is that anytime we are having those perfectionistic traits and we are trying our best to be perfect, we're redoing things five times, we're procrastinating because we're afraid that we're going to fail at the thing. Where, trying to get everybody else's opinion to see if it's done perfectly, we need that reassurance, all that kind of stuff. You're just keeping your body in that state of fight or flight, and it's not able to relax. And so that contributes to pain because when that state of fight or flight is on, basically the muscles are tense, the inflammation is there, all that stuff is happening. And so it's really hard for the body to relax.
Yeah, and I'm sure it goes hand in hand with what we were talking about before about like not enjoying the things too. Because if you're looking to do it the right way, the perfect way, and you're not enjoying the movement that you're doing, that also plays a role into how well you heal.
Absolutely. Yeah. Or if you're like trying to do something the exact right way. Or a lot of times, what I find with people with chronic pain is they do have to change their lifestyle a little bit. Maybe they were someone who used to go to the gym 4 or 5 days a week and lift really heavy weights. And right now, that's just not accessible to them. They still want to have that life, or they want things to be perfect the way they were before, or when you give them the physio exercises, they want to do those perfectly. And so, once again, that's just putting your body in this really hypervigilant state instead of allowing yourself to really tune into your body and recognize, okay, what does this actually feel like? Does this feel good? Does this not feel good? Could I do this in a different way that's going to feel better? We kind of ignore those intuitive feelings in our body and just try really hard to do it the perfect way that the physio told me on the paper.
So, what are some ways that you, as a physio, will cue that patient to kind of come out of that perfectionist state?
A big part of it is educating people, having conversations like this, so that they can recognize how much it really does play into the pain cycle that they're having. And of course, chronic pain is very complex. There's many, many things that contribute to it. But yeah, educating people on how perfectionism can play into the cycle is a big thing. I think being trauma informed and giving people that choice and just right off the bat saying, like, here are your couple options. They're all working similar muscles. You get to choose which one feels good. Maybe on a day where you feel really good, you could try this one. On a day where you're having a higher level of pain, you could try this exercise instead. That gives people the choice off the bat and releases the perfectionism of, okay, I have to do this one specific thing. I have these options here. Releases the pressure, basically. Those are the biggest things I do.
Do you feel like anyone, well, I guess the way that you set it up, that makes sense. I was going to ask if like you felt like anyone is so rigid and you like kind of have to tell them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, 100%. There's people, you know, who come back and they, I can like laugh about it because I'm also this person that's just like very that way. And like, I will come back with my whole plan and be like, I did 3 sets of 10 this day and my pain level was at a 5 out of 10. And then the next day I did this and it was at a 3 out of 10, but I also went on a walk that day and maybe that contributed to it. You're just kind of trying to figure out every little thing and figure out the puzzle. And that, you know, mindset once again puts that body in that hypervigilant state. So yeah, there's oftentimes where people come back and you just kind of have to point out, you know, do you maybe recognize these patterns, recognize what you're doing? I'm also not a mental health care provider, so there's only so much I can do to an extent. Physiotherapy is regulated in Canada, so there's a scope that you have to follow. So sometimes I do have to refer people out to therapists or suggest that it might be nice to talk to someone if they don't already have someone.
Which I feel like is a win-win all around, no matter what, you know.
For sure.
You work one-on-one with people mostly, right?
Yes.
But you have an online presence. So how does that work?
Yeah, so a big reason I created my online presence is because I don't know how it is in the States. In Canada, we obviously do have like universal health care. If you had an emergency, you had to go to the emergency room, all that stuff is covered and free. But if you do want to see a physiotherapist, there's only a limited time that it's covered. So if you've like had surgeries or if you're living in long-term care homes, things like that, you'll get the physiotherapy covered. But if you're just, you know, Joe Blow down the street and hurt your knee at the gym, you're going to have to pay for that physiotherapy unless you have extended benefits through your work, which they could cover some. So basically, that can become really expensive for people. And so I created my online presence because I just wanted to be able to offer something to people that was low cost or free of charge, because there's so much information that you can learn and you can get. Unfortunately, there's a lot of misinformation out in the internet. It's really hard to know what is good information and not good information. So I just felt like as a professional, it's something that I could do for people. So that's the main reason I created it, to create my YouTube channel that's completely free. And then I did create an online course that's essentially anything I would want to say to people that live with chronic pain, anything I'd want to work with them with. It would probably take me 5, 6, 7 sessions to do. It's kind of all dropped into this one course at a lower price so that people don't have to come pay out of pocket to see me.
That makes so much sense. I didn't like, I knew that about Canada's healthcare, but I also didn't like actually put the two together about how, like, so can people do like a Zoom call with you and work through like one-on-one that way, or is that just for the yoga?
They could do it for yoga, no problem, because physiotherapy is regulated. You have to be in British Columbia if you want physiotherapy from me. So if you're anywhere in BC, you could do a Zoom call and do it.
Got it.
But
Okay.
yoga is regulated differently. So I could do yoga with anybody anywhere in the world over Zoom. Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, cool. So tell me a little bit more about your course.
Yeah. So my course is basically a couple different modules that really explains what chronic pain is, different things that can contribute to chronic pain, different things that you can do for your chronic pain, some self-care, self-management techniques. And then along with that, there's a bunch of meditations that I threw in there and some movement practices that you could use for days with more pain, days with medium pain, days with low pain. And it's just something that you get access to for life. So you can always go back to it, practice those movement practices, do those meditations. There's a couple other like logs that you can use just to track pain and track different thoughts and things like that. So kind of everything, like I said, that I would do with someone in a, you know, 6, 7, 8 sessions, but it's just all packed into one course.
I love that. Do you have anything specific about like specific chronic pain in there, or like is it really just generalized?
It's pretty generalized. I think it could go for really any type of chronic pain, except if you're having like cancer type chronic pain,
Okay.
or if you have like an inflammatory arthritis. So if you had rheumatoid arthritis, osteoarthritis is fine because that's different. But if you have like an inflammatory arthritis, there's a bunch of different inflammatory arthritises that I won't dive into. But if you know that you have that or pain from cancer, it's not as applicable.
So, what are some of the more like common chronic pain issues that you deal with on a regular basis?
Yeah, the biggest thing I see is people with chronic low back pain. So they might have, yeah, had like a disc herniation back in the day, or maybe even just used to be an athlete, and over time they had wear and tear in their body and they just developed pain in their back that they have now on an ongoing basis. That's probably the biggest thing I see, that and neck pain. Migraines are another big one.
I talk with a lot of women who have like low back pain and neck pain, especially too.
Yeah, those little things like that, I can treat for sure. Sometimes too, like it's always good to go to someone one-on-one because they can really dive in and see, oh, is there muscle imbalances? Is there different things that are contributing? Could we strengthen specific muscles or look at different things? Sometimes a nice little massage just feels good for the time being. Yeah.
What about posture?
So posture is an interesting subject. There is a lot of newer research that shows that for low back pain, your posture doesn't matter as much. So more important that you're kind of constantly changing positions throughout the day than it is to always constantly be sitting with like an erect, perfect posture for low back pain specifically. For neck pain, there is a little bit more research that if you have that kind of forward head posture where you're always leaning your head forward, often seen when we're like texting or on a computer 8 hours a day, that type of thing, there is a little more research that over time that can contribute to neck pain. So you want to focus a little bit more on fixing that posture and building up those muscles there. But I do always tell people overall, it's just good to try and switch positions frequently throughout the day, especially that perfectionistic thing that can come in where we're just constantly like, I need to have this perfect posture. I need to be sitting this certain way. I'm a failure if I'm not doing this right. It's really hard to sit in one posture all day. Our muscles are not used to doing that. They don't necessarily need to be doing that all day. So better to just switch around.
Right. And I would imagine if you are, constantly like rolling back those shoulders and like holding that posture, you're actually more tense.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Really interesting stuff. How about like free resources? I know you said you have a YouTube channel.
I do, yeah. So I have a YouTube channel. It's primarily trauma-informed yoga. I do have a couple other videos. Occasionally, I'll throw out videos about chronic pain things. I do have one coming out about perfectionism and chronic pain. Different things like that. Some like gentle movement things that aren't necessarily yoga are on that channel. And then on my website too, I do just have a really small booklet that's free, like chronic pain education, and one that has some chair yoga postures in case you're not able to do standing yoga and you want a different option. And then I do have a little workbook that's not free, but I think it's like $6 Canadian, so cheaper American. I don't know how much it is, $4.
I think it's like maybe $4. Yeah. Cool. Awesome. So, where can people go to find more about you, maybe work with you, find your course, all that stuff?
Yeah, so you can find me at Audriana Physio on Instagram. That's where I probably post the most. And then my YouTube channel, you can find it at Empowered Movement on YouTube, or if you type in my full name, usually it pops up. And then my website is empoweredmovement.ca, and you can find all the free resources on there, the YouTube channel, my Instagram. It's all connected through my website and the course.
Awesome. I will link all of those in the show notes if you guys want to check out Adriana. And last question before you
Yeah.
go, just for fun, if you could eliminate any short girl problem, what would it be?
Oh, that's hard. Like my automatic reaction is like trying to get things off the top shelf because I'm constantly climbing counters, but I feel like there's a better one than that I want to think of. But you know what I actually hate is sitting in chairs where I can't reach the ground. I really do not like the feeling of my feet dangling. And so I think I would somehow get rid of that I can always have a chair where my feet touch the ground. That is not a problem.
How appropriate that you would bring this up, because I feel like, isn't that like not good for your low back when your feet don't touch the floor all the way?
Sure. I don't actually know. I'd have to look into
Okay.
some research. It would maybe make sense that it's impacting the low back. I just don't like the feeling of the feet dangling.
Yeah, I don't like the feeling either. I feel like when they dangle too much, I don't know, I feel like I feel it in my low back more, but that might just be a me
I'll have to
thing.
see. I'll get back to you on that.
But that is a good one. I don't think I've heard that one before, but yeah, I'm with you. The feet dangling is, it's just
Or finding pants that are
uncomfortable.
like the right length. That's another big one too.
That one, the sun visor in the car is always a big one.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's so many.
Yeah.
My partner's 6'1", so it's great because he can just fix a lot of the problems for me. But the chair one, he can't fix.
Right? Mine too. Well, cool. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate you taking the time to do
Yeah,
this.
thanks so much for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. If you liked what you heard, go give Audriana a follow, find her YouTube channel. All that good stuff is in the show notes. Thank you again for listening, and as always, I'll catch you in the next episode.